This is the EMDocs.net podcast with Britt Long and Manny Singh. We bring you high-yield content about what you're seeing every day in the ED. Welcome back to part two of upper airway obstruction with Jess Pelletier from Washington University School of Medicine. Jess, it's great to have you back. Last time we had left off talking about some pre-oxygenation. We had a very difficult airway scenario. We talked a little bit about Crike, but when it comes to some other airway approaches, what are some other alternatives that you could use instead of videoscope or DL with paralysis?
Thanks for bringing me back on the podcast, Britt. I'm excited to be here and to wrap up this challenging case. Awake fiber optic intubation is the gold standard method for intubation of the difficult airway. Fiber optic intubation is an excellent option for patients with upper airway obstruction, but with the caveat that your patient must be cooperative. Additionally, there will be some upper airway obstructions that are not passable even with fiber optic. If the upper airway obstruction is in the oropharynx, such as with angioedema, then the nasotracheal route should be selected. If fiber optic is pursued, the patient must receive copious topical analgesia and an appropriate level of sedation to maintain spontaneous respiratory effort. Potential methods for administration of topical anesthetics include atomizer, nebulizer, or direct topical application. Using a minimal safe dose of local anesthetic is essential, since local anesthetic systemic toxicity can result even below calculated thresholds for maximum dosing, especially in the setting of airway edema, because this can lead to increased medication absorption. On the other hand, not using enough topical anesthetic can lead to laryngospasm and necessity for conversion to a surgical airway method. Carefully titrated fentanyl or midazolam can be used for sedation and should not alter secretions. Propofol has been found to be associated with more coughing, so it's not an ideal agent for use with fiber optic intubation. Ketamine is more likely to help the patient maintain respiratory effort, but you should consider concomitant administration of glycopyrrolate to help reduce secretions. Dexmedetomidine has also been shown to be an effective choice for awake fiber optic intubation, both alone and in combination with ketamine.
That medication component of an awake intubation is essential, especially the topical anesthetics, the nebulizer, the atomizer, and then I like to use ketamine in small pushes until I just get to that point of dissociation or just to patient comfort. Let's say fiber optic intubation is not an option at your shop, or you're just not comfortable with it. What's next?
Well, at this point, Britt, you do have a few other options. Ramped positioning refers to elevating the head of the bed by 20 to 25 degrees. Some early studies of ramping were promising. A prospective observational study comparing ramped to supine positioning during intubation of patients by ED residents and attendings found equal first-pass success rates. A review of the National Emergency Airway Registry, or the NEAR database, found no improvement in post-induction hypoxemia rates for patients placed in a ramped position, so somewhat different result from that small trial. Unfortunately, a 2021 systematic review and meta-analysis of studies comparing ramped positioning to sniffing position found no significant improvement of ramping over supine positioning for glottic view, first-pass success, or time to intubation. However, this meta-analysis only included three studies. Given the limited data we have at this point, Britt, whether ramping is beneficial is unknown. There are also no studies examining the use of ramping for patients with upper airway obstruction specifically.
Yeah, I know the data don't show improved first-pass success, but you really need to base this on what you're comfortable with. If you like the ramp position, use it. You want to do everything that will give you the best chance for first-pass success. What's next, Jess?
Well, another theoretical option would be seated oropharyngeal intubation, also known as the tomahawk method. There's limited data to support this. One randomized prospective trial involving paramedic and medical students practicing intubation on mannequins found that students had greater first-pass success and intubated more quickly using the face-to-face method compared with intubation facing the patient with the patient's supine or standard supine intubation. But these were novice participants. A pilot study involving cadavers intubated by a single EM physician found similar intubation times and glottic views when intubation was performed seated and supine. There are also case reports of successful first-pass intubation of seated patients. Given the very limited evidence, the decision to utilize face-to-face intubation should be made on a case-by-case basis and depending on your own comfort with this method.
Exactly. Use what you're comfortable with. I like to have the patient seated, or you can use a bed with a 75-degree angle. I stand on a stool over the patient, and then I use a video scope to intubate the patient using the same approach as a normal RSI, just standing over the patient. I'm not a big fan of the tomahawk approach, and most of the evidence comes from people who are used to performing this. And this is a scenario where you want to use what you're going to be comfortable with. Let's say you've tried a couple attempts or those three attempts, but you haven't had success. What are the next steps?
Yeah, so this is where we start thinking about airway adjuncts followed by invasive procedures. We'll start off with the supraglottic airway device or SGA. The Difficult Airway Society guidelines recommend moving to SGA after three unsuccessful attempts at intubation. This will be the case for many patients with upper airway obstruction, though obstruction is not technically a contraindication to attempting an SGA placement. You'll have to consider where the blockage is in your particular patient. An SGA could actually exacerbate the problem. For example, in the case of our patient, an SGA would have resulted in even more complete airway obstruction because of the supraglottic location of his mass. So consider the level of obstruction and whether or not an SGA will be effective before you move to this method. And that leaves us with the next option, cricothyrotomy.
All right, we're there. So what do we need to know about crike?
Well, the Difficult Airway Society guidelines recommend crike as the invasive airway management technique of choice in the cannot intubate, cannot ventilate situation, like our patient. In patients with palpable landmarks, they recommend the stab, twist, bougie tube method, like we mentioned earlier, which can be performed as follows. Start off with the laryngeal handshake to identify your landmarks, finding the cricothyroid membrane. A horizontal incision is made through the membrane, and the scalpel is then rotated so the blade faces toward the feet, which dilates the space. A bougie is passed through the opening in a caudal direction, and a 6-0 endotracheal tube is passed over the bougie into the trachea. If the cricothyroid membrane is not palpable on your exam, the 2015 Difficult Airway Society guidelines recommend the scalpel finger bougie method. The only difference with this is that an 8 to 10 centimeter vertical incision is made first, followed by blunt dissection to reach the cricothyroid membrane. The remainder of the steps are the same as with the stab, twist, bougie tube method. Though there's case reports of successful awake cricothyrotomy, it's important to note that crike should only be performed in a paralyzed patient according to the Difficult Airway Society guidelines. There's limited data at this point to support one method of crike over the other. One randomized controlled trial involving EM residents practicing on anesthetized sheep found that the scalpel bougie tube method, also known as the rapid four-step technique, was significantly faster than the traditional crike using a Shiley tracheostomy tube. Other methods for crike include needle crike and percutaneous crike. Needle cricothyrotomy is preferred in pediatrics, but should only be a temporizing measure for adults. Types of percutaneous crike include needle over trocar or Seldinger. The former seems to be faster, but the latter has a higher success rate when they're compared directly. Surgical techniques, like the rapid four-step technique, have been shown to be faster than percutaneous techniques in cadaver and animal models, but the studies are difficult to compare to one another. The take-home here is that you should perform whichever method you're most comfortable with doing the fastest and most accurately without injury to yourself or the patient until we have more data to tell us that one method is better than others.
I love that take-home point. It gets back to our other approaches as well. Use what you think is going to give you the highest chance of success. And when it comes to Crike, make sure you're mentally practicing this at least a couple times a month. So when that patient comes in, you've already walked through it mentally. Now, I hate to ask this, but let's say your Crike failed. What else do you have left in your bag?
Ooh, that's a terrifying proposition, Britt. Tracheostomy is considered an option in the 2022 American Society of Anesthesiology guidelines under invasive airway techniques. This procedure can be performed in a manner similar to Seldinger technique cricothyrotomy if your Crike fails and there's no anesthesia backup available. A systematic review found that there were fewer long-term complications, but no difference in rates of early complications associated with emergency Crike when compared with emergency trach. We don't have data to say whether this procedure is faster or safer when performed by EM physicians, since this isn't typically within our scope of practice. I'm going to touch briefly on retrograde intubation here, not something that we usually have in our toolbox, but if you have tried emergency Crike and trach and they both failed, then this is one potential option. Essentially, you would puncture the cricothyroid membrane with a large bore needle attached to a syringe, which will allow you to confirm entry into the trachea. You then feed a guide wire in a cephalad direction and pull it through the mouth, secure it to a small bore endotracheal tube, and advance that into the trachea. Again, this is something we don't do very often, and it offers many potential complications like damage to the vocal cords, airway hemorrhage, and subcutaneous emphysema. My hope is that anesthesia would be at the bedside with you by the point in time that you'd need to do a retrograde intubation.
All right, Jess. So lots of great content here over these last two episodes. What are the key points you want to leave for our listeners?
Yeah, let's go through some pearls and pitfalls here, Britt. So pearl, stridor should raise concern for upper airway obstruction and a difficult airway. The pitfall would be failing to recognize upper airway obstruction as the cause of respiratory distress and thus being unprepared for a difficult airway. Adequate pre-oxygenation and apneic oxygenation are essential for safe intubation, but remember that pulse ox is not adequate to predict appropriate pre-oxygenation. Awake fiber optic intubation is the gold standard approach for airway management in the patient with upper airway obstruction. And the pitfall here is failing to have a backup plan for the upper airway obstruction patient if awake fiber optic intubation is unavailable or impossible. Potential alternatives to awake fiber optic intubation include face-to-face intubation or tomahawk method, or you can try RSI in the ramped position. Depending on positioning to ensure safe RSI in the upper airway obstruction is definitely a pitfall. We can't guarantee that intubation will be successful even if the patient is positioned in an ideal manner. Supraglottic airway placement is recommended if three attempts at intubation fail. But remember that placing an SGA in a patient with impending glottic obstruction will probably only exacerbate the problem. Cricothyrotomy is the preferred invasive airway management strategy in the cannot intubate, cannot ventilate scenario, and scalpel bougie tube is possibly the fastest and most reliable technique for us as ED physicians. The pitfall here is being uncomfortable or unfamiliar with the Crike equipment stocked in your own ED. Emergent tracheostomy or retrograde intubation are potential rescue techniques if you fail cricothyrotomy. And the pitfall here is not having a backup plan for a failed Crike.
Great stuff, Jess. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And we really appreciate you and everything you've been doing for us.
Thanks so much, Britt. It was great to be here with you. And I hope to speak with you again soon.
All right. Well, stay safe and healthy, everyone.